Good evening. Thank you for coming here tonight. My name is Iho Pomeroy. My husband, Derek Pomeroy, is from Billings, Montana. He practices law here in Bozeman. And we have two children. Their names are Jinju Pomeroy and Youngjae Pomeroy. When I was a student at University of Montana, Missoula, I had two children. My husband told them, please, let's give an easy American name. I said, no. They are 50% Korean. So I gave them a Korean name. Jinju Pomeroy, Youngjae Pomeroy, they both went Bozeman Public School here. I have been running Iho's Korean Grill for 20 years here. And also I have been your city commissioner almost 4 years. And I enjoy working for this community, both through fundraisers for local causes held at Iho's Korean Grill and by serving on our city commission. I have learned a tremendous amount about our city government during last 4 years. If I will work even more effectively if you re-elect me. Thank you.
I'm Doug Chandler. My family moved here in 1960 when I was 11 months old. I'm the son of a teacher and a nurse and the brother of three sisters. I grew up and went to college and married my wife, Sonia, who's right over there, here in Bozeman. Sonia and I moved away to Seattle for a while and started moving back after we had kids in 1991. Now, after raising four kids in 50 of my 58 years here in Bozeman, I still love Bozeman, and that's why I'm running. I have about 32 years of civil engineering consulting experience, a lot of it designing, permitting, and building infrastructure similar to what the city of Bozeman has and needs, and so I know a lot about infrastructure. I also have about 28 years of business experience as a founder and current president of Allied Engineering. Politically, I'm a moderate. I think that'll be helpful in dealing with the more conservative county and state governments, and we have a number of things we have to deal with them on that I hope we get to discuss a little later. Anyway, I'm thankful to be here. Appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
My name's Terry Cunningham, and I believe that we are all called as human beings to make a positive difference in the world. So my wife, Laura, and I have tried to make a positive difference here in Montana, in Bozeman, by volunteering at the food bank, at the animal shelter, and other nonprofit causes. We've also taken on volunteer leadership positions. I was actually the chairman of the board of Bozeman Deaconess for 4 years, and during that time, under my tenure, we actually were named one of the top 100 hospitals in the United States, and we had outreach programs to expand access. I want to campaign the way I would govern. High energy, innovative solutions. So I've developed a whole bunch of innovative solutions that I'd love to talk to you about tonight, and I know I'll get an opportunity to a little bit. Dorothy Eck said, if you see a problem, don't complain about it, fix it. And I've done that, whether it's building dog parks, whether it's building climbing boulders. I develop a coalition. We work as a team. We work with the city. We work with the county. We get things done. Bozeman needs leaders who can tackle complex issues. And my management experience with RJR and Nabisco, Turner Broadcasting, and my own company will serve this community well. Now, you have the vote. You have the power. Make us earn your vote.
Hi, I'm Heidi Arneson. I grew up as the granddaughter of a World War II veteran, daughter of an Air Force officer, and joined the Air Force myself. Following the Air Force, I worked as a research and development scientist at Texas Instruments in their missile systems division. I became a weather hazard forecaster for American Airlines, and now I teach in the aviation weather at Gallant College. We moved to Bozeman 20 years ago. We were looking for a place to raise our sons. Dallas was not where we wanted to do that. We'd move there for the jobs. For 11 years, I ran a nonprofit that partnered businesses with schools. I've recently been reelected to my fourth term on the school board, where I've received hundreds of hours of training in Montana local government. I volunteer for several organizations, and I'm currently training my fifth dog for therapy work. I recently lost my working dog, and hopefully we can get the new one into the classroom soon. Meteorology is a very different science. You put all the data in, but then you have to work with your customers and understand how that weather impacts them. And my background influences how I solve problems. I listen, I gather information, and then make the decisions that best fit our community. There have been many partnerships with the city in my 10 years in the school board. I decided to run because I had seen so many items on our agenda and thought maybe it was time to work from there. I'm a scientist and educator and someone who's lived a life of service. I want to take that knowledge and experience to the next level. I want to thank you all for being here and for sponsors for making this event possible. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Matt Zapparito. I am 32 years old. I moved here in 2004 to attend school at MSU. I got my degree in global and multicultural studies, which is basically political science and history. Like most people, when I graduated, I wasn't able to find a job in town that had to deal with my degree, but I did what I could to stay, doing odd jobs and eventually starting my own little business here in town, a little leather business. My expertise isn't at the level of some of the people at the table. I don't have the experience that some of the others here do, but I am here to get young folks involved, to get them more active, to try to show them that it's just not one generation's game who has the connections established here in town. I'd like to take a new direction in some regards. I'd like to add voices to the commission. I'd like to have Westside input, and all these things I think together would have some diversity up here and some new directions for us to go down. I do this without a lot of experience because I care for a lot of people, and it doesn't matter if you're Republican, it doesn't matter if you're Democrat. I would like to start bridging those divides which we see at the federal level, the state level, municipality levels, and come together, work with solutions to move forward. So thank you very much.
Chris? Good evening, everyone. My name's Chris Mell. Thanks for coming. Real quickly, so you all know, all ballots will be by mail, and you'll pick two of the five candidates here for commission, and then you'll pick one between Brian and me for mayor, and then we pay for postage and you send it back. So that's what's at stake. Three votes, two for commission, one for mayor. I am the son of a minister and a nurse, and they taught me that if you weren't giving back to your community, you weren't truly part of your community. So one of the things, for example, I've done since coming to Bozeman was help raise more than $6 million for this library. It's a tremendous asset for us. Also worked on a Parks and Trails bond so that we could build parks like Story Mill, the ponds expansion across the city. My goal is to serve the community with humility. We need to have compassion, understand that we're not perfect, and we listen to folks, and we make better decisions because we hear from people. Priorities for me would be, as we grow, and we're growing like crazy, how do we preserve our quality of life? The next question we'll hear is about affordable housing, so I'll leave details for that later. Another one is I have ideas for how to make the tax system more progressive so it's fair to us as we go forward in these expensive times. And finally, let's improve communication between citizens in the city. We don't have to be Washington, D.C. We are a small community. We can get along. Disagreement does not mean disrespect. It's important that we function together. I'd love to have your support. I'm anxious to serve the city. We're in an exciting time, and I think through it we can preserve our quality of life and keep the Bozeman that we love. Thank you.
Thank you. Good evening, everybody. Thank you to all the sponsors. Thank you all to you for coming out tonight. I'm Brian Lemires. I have lived in Montana all my life. I was born and raised in Billings. I moved here to go to school back in last century sometime, and ended up liking it so much that I stuck it out after I graduated, worked almost 5 years in the service industry after I graduated in order to find a professional job in using my degree, and which allowed me to earn my CPA license. I'm actually employed with the City of Bozeman. I've been there for over 21 and a half years. I'm the controller / software application manager in the finance department. I love the job. I would have to quit the job if I were to win. The main reason, I guess, that I would say that I'm running is that I just think that the city can do a better job of representing the values of this community and carrying out the will of the people. I'm an avid commission meeting watcher, a wannabe on TV, and I just get the sense that the wrong people are controlling the show. I want the commission to be more in charge than, and I feel that the consultants and perhaps even the time administration are leading our policy instead of what you people want. So that's basically my platform. So thank you.
Excellent candidate. Very good. So here was prepared question number one that I sent to people. What innovative solution will you use to solve the affordable housing problem in order to ensure an economically diverse community? Everybody gets 90 seconds. Let's start with Brian.
Okay. Well, when I heard, are we standing for all of them?
Yeah, please.
Okay. So, when I heard innovative, I was thinking something sort of wacky and off the wall. So I thought, I Googled around and I saw a building over parking lots. Looked actually like something I'd never heard of before, because I thought that's what we were maybe looking for, something we never heard of before. Building over parking lots on strong stilts. I mean, small parking lots downtown with the density downtown. And maybe two or three stories of rentals above the parking lot. Or even bigger over Walmart, over Home Depot, those kinds of things. But I don't know how realistic that is. So really what I landed on is just looking at the problems of the affordable housing policy and the affordable housing ordinance as I see them now. I asked myself, how did we get here? And I think, well, let's have the next time we go around here, let's have some of the people who have a problem with it and have a problem implementing it because of it not just not being a practical solution. Let's have Swinbia, let's have the Building Association, maybe work with HRDC. Let's have them write the next policy. They can get their own consultants, work with their own consultants. It would still go through the same public process that all of the city policies do. It would be subject to legal review, but just something that's going to work. Something that when it's all said and done, we don't find out, hey, this isn't going to work. So that would be my idea. Oh, 15 seconds. I thought that was good. Well, let's see. Have one other one, and there's the stop.
I think this is one of the most vital questions facing our community. My only quibble with it is an innovative solution. And frankly, it's going to take a whole host of solutions to address this. There is no one single magic bullet. So what the city's doing is really in three parts. First, we're trying to incentivize building. So we're looking at how long it takes to approve a project. We're looking at the lot size and other things, so because volume is part of the answer. Second, we're looking at providing assistance, mostly financial assistance, say to HRDC. I see Heather back in the back. For down payment assistance or matching federal tax credits, for example, we built just more than 200 units along Oak Street for lower income rental housing. More than half of our residents rent. So a housing solution has to be both rental and ownership. They are tied together in a way that affect each other, so we must include both of them. We have an advisory board right now that has a Swinbia member on it, that also has members of the low-income housing and others that do that, and they do a great job of giving us suggestions. I think as we go forward, we'll have a staffer that mans that office, because it's so important for us to get this right that we need to look into that. And the third part, frankly, is regulatory. While we're doing a number of incentives, we're also going to be asking the builders, and we are asking them now, that for every 10 units they build, the 10th one has to be affordable. Everyone has to contribute to this together if we're going to solve it. This is a national problem. Bozeman's caught up in it, and it's going to take a systemic and a hard amount of work to get it done. Thanks.
Sorry.
So a couple points here. One, I think we should create a board, an advisory board strictly of renters, so we know what affordable housing is to renters in this community. It might not be what it is national average, to make sure that what we see as affordable housing is what renters see as affordable housing. And the more we know about what they want, the better we'll be able to communicate with the developers to make sure that what we build in this town is what the renters need. A lot of renters pay a substantial amount for that rent, so we're really close to getting them into homes. We're really just the down payment away to get them into their first home. Another thing is I'd like to inquire about is hyperdensity. Land is really expensive here. If we could somehow, in some areas, allow four houses to go in where we usually only allow three houses to go in, we can cut down drastically on the initial purchase price of the land itself. Some other more creative things. It'd be nice if MSU was to build a lot of student housing or affordable housing to create places for all the new people that are coming into this town. I understand that is a long shot and that's hard, but at least maybe we could work with them to create express bus routes to go from student-dense areas to campus at specific hours, not only to take traffic off the road, but to save them hundreds and hundreds of dollars in the annual parking pass they have to do, plus the time it takes them to walk to and from class. Another thing is mid-level housing in between single-family homes and high-rises. I think we need to have a good combination. You know, we can do commercial lower, we can do residential above, we can cut down on where people have to go to and from to get where they need to go, and to cut down on other problems in town, such as growth and traffic. Thank you very much.
Heidi?
As the others have said, there's no magic bullet. There's no one answer. If there was, this wouldn't be a problem. Using the tools of a clear strategic plan, recommendations from the Community Affordable Housing Advisory Board, and research on what's working in other growing communities like ours, we need to take a multiple solution approach. We need to look at making single-family housing affordable. We need to look at adding condos, but we also have to look at more affordable rental properties and how we make that happen. Just as with Larkspur Commons, future affordable housing is likeliest to happen through partnerships. The school district, the university, and possibly the hospital are interested in collaborating on workforce housing, which would take some of the pressure off our housing market. Having a single point of contact within the city for her affordable housing projects, evaluating regulations that may get in the way of potential solutions like tiny homes, and developing a streamlined process for getting those affordable housing from concept to reality, improves this. If we can improve the system we have, can help make Bozeman have more affordable housing and allow those who work here to live here.
Can I use her remaining 30 seconds too? Sorry. Okay. It's not a zero-sum game. I'm sorry. Bozeman's affordable housing crisis has far-reaching consequences in the community. And so I have proposed two specific solutions for that, and I've presented them to the Affordable Housing Advisory Board and the Commission. The first one is workforce housing. This 23-page program available on my website encourages employers who have the land to build affordable and convenient housing for their employees. Studies have shown that folks who live close to where they work are happier, more loyal to the organization, and it cuts down on traffic, pollution, and congestion. It's a great idea, and we have to incentivize that. The second one, I researched what are the other programs that are working in other towns with real solutions. And there's one in Bend that I modeled this program after. And they have a fee-based program that has generated $8 of value for every dollar they put into it. They have generated the second highest level of affordable housing in the state of Oregon, even though they're the number five population, and it really works, and growth pays for affordable housing in this. Our community needs a lot of tools in the toolbox to solve affordable housing. These two are the big hammers.
Yes, ma'am. Affordable housing, yes. Affordable housing is one of the city's top priorities. 4 years ago when I ran, it was one of my top priorities, one of my passions. And when I worked for city almost 4 years, you're right, there is no silver bullet. Affordable housing, we all have to work it out together, our community. This is an ongoing problem. Right now, our current affordable housing ordinance is encourage single detached home. We should encourage condos, duplexes, townhouses, and the rental home. Any kind of type houses we need to encourage. Last year, my campaign manager, Carol Stoll, and Mary Van Hoor showed me a magazine. It's a New Yorker. It's what it is that right now, young generation in America, affordable housing is not only Bozeman's problem. Young generation, two or couples sharing a house. And that's just, I really like to see this one. This is a really innovative solution. Two families sharing a house, sharing, that means helping a child care if they have a children and a couple, that is great for the environment. So if you re-elect me, I really encourage this kind of innovative sharing houses with the families. Thank you.
I favor a regulatory adjustment of our regulatory environment to favor small quality homes instead of more of a subsidy type program. I think the subsidies should be reserved for the poorest of our citizens, not necessarily the people that kind of have average incomes that are just on the edge of being able to buy a house. I don't think it's really fair that a half dozen people might have to pay $3,000 to $4,000 more for their house, so this small band of our people population can buy a house. So some of the things I favor are townhouses, condos, apartments, and accessory rentals, and I believe we should be annexing and zoning for those things to take some of the risk out of it. I also think we should expedite projects, both subdivisions and building projects, that have an affordable housing component. I also believe that we can index impact fees to considerably favor affordable housing. I was on the Impact Fee Citizens Advisory Committee, and I learned a fair amount about them. And basically, we can adjust, and the city already has to some extent, the amount of the fee in accordance with size of the lot in the house. I think that should be expanded. We can also index it for how fast things are growing. Anyway, those are some of my ideas. I have another one about MSU for question three.
Okay, now we have some rapid fire questions. I'm gonna start with you and then skip to Heidi and then Iho and then back around. What's the last book you read?
Last book?
Yeah.
Power and the Glory by Graham Greene.
Thank you. Heidi?
Don't say anything to anyone.
Don't say
by a local author.
Iho?
It was in Korean. It's Korean. I don't think you remember.
Never mind.
Yes. Thank you. My comfort.
The Irreducible Mind of Psychology for the 21st Century.
Huh. Yeah.
Lincoln and the Bardo.
Oh, yeah.
The most recent one I finished was Blitz. Then the one I'm reading now is American Coyote.
I'm currently reading Zen and the Art of Motorcycle. It does.
That's okay, next question. What do you like, dogs or cats?
Dogs.
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 Dogs. Dogs. I'm allergic to cats. I love looking at them. But I...
yeah. Heidi, what did you want to be when you grew up?
An astronaut.
Mickey Mantle.
Great politician.
A professional skier.
Right.
Well, I successful business owner, I guess.
Okay.
I thought I was going to be a chemist until organic happened.
I thought I was going to be a doctor until organic happened.
Rally car driver. Race car driver.
I see. Okay. So that's just a little for your amusement. Here's prepared question number two. Those last three were not prepared. What is your vision of a good working relationship between the city and the county? 90 seconds. Yes. Let's start with Heidi and we'll go around.
Okay. Much like the city and the county, when I was first elected to the school board, the district and the city did not have a great working relationship. When we adopted our long-range strategic plan, we understood we couldn't accomplish our goals without partnership with the city, and so we worked to improve that, as did the city. Through meetings between staff and joint meetings between the city commission and the school board, we developed a memorandum of agreement that helps direct our relationship. It has resulted in successful partnerships, such as the parking solution on Lammy next to Hawthorne. That's created a much safer intersection, and the development of the city sports park that will be happening in conjunction with the new high school. True win-win solutions. Staff from the city, county, MSU hospital, and other community organizations sit on our committees so that our plans are not developed in isolation. The city needs to find common ground and develop better relationships with the county through staff relationships and joint meetings. As Bozeman grows, we need to be able to manage the impact of the growth across the city and into the county. This requires a positive working relationship and strong communication between the city and the county, both their staff and their leadership, either jointly making decisions or coordinating their decisions and thinking through how these decisions impact the other. Personally, I'd like to see regular meetings between staff and hopefully between leadership, as well as city and county staff and leadership, sitting on each other's committees to focus on solutions, helping both the city and county move forward and successfully manage our growth.
This is the photo of the first dog going off the dock diving thing at the regional park. What the photo does not show are three smiling county commissioners who came to this ribbon cutting and were praising the private-public partnership that yielded this dog park. I can show you another one that has to do with climbing boulders. My point is that I have worked on a collaborative basis with the county commissioners. I'm a proven quantity to them, and I'm a trusted partner. You don't have to be philosophically aligned with folks to get along with them. I believe that good personal relationships generate good professional relationships. We're going to be forced to, when we reach the 50,000 population threshold, to work with the county and other folks federally mandated to do a transportation plan. We shouldn't have to have the feds say, you got to get along, because we have to work in the mutual interest of our citizens, because we city residents are also county residents. We have to take a long regional look at things like water conservation and traffic planning and annexing for the future. It's important that we do things together. So in the spirit of that, I'm going to go, if elected, to one county commission meeting a month, not to tell them what to do, but to listen, to hear what they're going through, and to be a trusted partner in the room who's willing to work with them. I don't think you have to be of like mind in terms of philosophical belief to get along and to move things forward.
Sorry. Yes, Ms. Sally Mason, I have a question for you.
What's that?
Do you have sisters and brothers?
I do.
Do you always get along?
No.
Okay, you answered my questions. My mom and my dad have five children. I'm a fourth out of five children. When I grew up, I had a lot of disagreement with my brothers and sisters. Sometimes we had a fight, but we are brother and sister. What I believe is, just like our county and the city, we are a family. Sometimes we have some disagreement. We have some work to do. For example, we all know we need to build a law and justice center. So I am love to working with the county again, and that I feel like they are my family. Sometimes we have disagreement. Thank you. Yep.
I think we need to be more genuinely and cooperatively in the same spirit with the county in roads and bridges and development and zoning and transportation plans, all that kind of thing. And I believe if we understand them, like Terry said, better, we'll be able to work with them better. I happen to work with the county quite a bit, so I do go to quite a few county commission meetings, and I do feel like I understand them. And I think we can make some progress if we try on things like the Law and Justice Center. And a countywide gas tax. They need money as badly as we do for roads and transportation projects. And that one will probably take a little cooperation with the state now, because there's been some changes in the laws and so forth on that one that now I think the state has to get involved again to get that one done. But I think we need to get money from tourists, and we need to fund some of our infrastructure and maybe some tax reform by that method, and they're in the same boat. So I'm very hopeful that we can cooperate on the Law and Justice Center. They have a different attitude about projects. They tend to be not quite as grandiose, a little bit more practical, and I think we need to understand that and work toward a cooperative and compromise.
Well, if we could get it down to just one lawsuit a year, that would be a good thing. In all seriousness, I mean, the lawsuit is an embarrassment, really, because the public looks at any government. I know in a lot of your eyes, you don't see the city and you don't see the county and you don't really see the state. They're all government, right? And it's just an embarrassment when government can't get along to the point where something like that happens. What I ask myself is how did it happen? At my level of the organization, like say for example in the finance department, we get along fine with my similar whatever the people in similar position over in the county. with grants and with and the public safety people get along fine with shared law and justice endeavors. And in fact, this this latest attempt on the Law and Justice Center was just, they knocked it out of the park with a level of cooperation that we've never seen before. And I think the reason for that success was due in large part to the elected officials from both sides being the ones that were interacting. And I ask myself, and I need to be careful, the city attorney says I can't talk about things that I only know because of my job. I need to talk about things that are in the public domain. And so I do not know how we got to the lawsuit that we're in right now. But I think to myself, if Carson Taylor had been the one communicating with the county the whole time, I really don't think we would have got there. He's a reasonable guy. He puts his ego off to the side. And so I think that it was somebody down the line, somebody that's not directly accountable to you, that was speaking on your behalf, and I think we might consider changing that system.
Chris.
Great. Thanks. So the practicality is that, for the most part, we do get along quite well. Our street departments work well together. As you heard, the Law and Justice Center was a cooperative agreement. The Sheriff's Department and the Police Department work well together. Bozeman is the safest large city in Montana because those departments work well together. It's vital that they do so. Going forward, the county is suing us. And so Carson did go to all the meetings, and we did try as hard as we can. And we will continue to do so. I see the deputy mayor here, and I know that they met with the county today. And we meet almost every month to talk about that, as we should, and that's really important to continue to do so. I'm on something called the Planning Coordinating Committee. It's Belgrade, Bozeman, and the county. We've worked out that we're going to try and plan for the triangle, which is Four Corners up to Belgrade, over to Bozeman, where a lot of the growth is happening, to see how we can save taxpayer money, but also build in a way that is more sustainable. And so just yesterday in Belgrade, we met at the library there, and we approved a contract to have us facilitated between the three planning boards of the communities and come up with some joint community plans that will respect those values and opportunities. We're also looking at having a map, which Joe Skinner supports and I support, around the city of Bozeman, for annexation, so we can give some predictability to voters and taxpayers that are out there about where the city is going and why. That's the kind of cooperation that we need. We need to continue it. We need to do the best we can. We can't control others, but we put our best foot forward.
And Matt.
So I agree with a lot of what's been said up here today. I agree that it's unfortunate we've gotten to the point of a lawsuit. It'd be nice if we could work together and never get to that point. I also agree with what Terry said about how having all these small projects is really important for us to keep our vision together and cohesive. It's nice to have those big, grandiose goals like the Law and Justice Center and big traffic issues, but it's also really important to have little things that we could work towards to keep reaffirming to ourselves that we can do this together and we can get along, even though we might have different points of view. A lot of the small things. First, you're way more into it than I am. You know way more than I do, and it sounds like we communicate quite well, but I'd like to make sure we have our priorities lined up and in accordance with one another, and to make sure that what we think is important and what they think are important are the things that we can work on most and put up front. I rode my bike down here tonight from the west end of town, and I still can't get down here on a bike lane down Durston. And it's not like the road gets skinnier. At one point, they just redid the lines, and all of a sudden, the line just goes right to the edge of the road, and the bike lane is gone. So it's not like I'm asking for, you know, new pavement, new gravel, anything like that. It'd just be nice to talk to one another and say, hey, let's make little changes like that, maintain bike lanes, do certain things like that that aren't going to cost us a lot of money at first and are little stepping stones towards our big goals.
Okay, then we have one more prepared question that we gave to the candidates, and then we're going to open it up to your questions. So the third question is, why should an MSU student vote for you? And should we start with
the obvious one? Is it fair to say that this is a hard question to answer? First off, I'm part of your generation still. I graduated from MSU back in 2010, and I did not find a job in my degree, but I was determined to stay here and make it work because of how much I love this town. I understand that the majority of my friends who are professionals here took a 40% pay cut to stay here, and that I owe a large percentage of my friends to the fact that they love this town enough to stay over money. I face the same struggles. I don't have a career lined up. I have multiple jobs now that I do and maintain to stay in this town. I don't have a retirement plan. I don't have a 401k. I have none of those fallbacks to rely on. I see a part of town that I'm sure a lot of people don't. I, every once in a while, go out on the weekends and stay out until 2 o'clock in the morning. I see what the cops deal with. I see what sort of drunk behavior we have. I see a part of this town that most people don't, that run for these positions, which is good. You know, you shouldn't be up 2 o'clock in the morning. And lastly, I'm trying to get more young people involved. I think it's time that we play a more active role. I think it's important. I don't think you should rely on having a lot of money or a lot of time to do this. You need a good team, you need dedication, and you can do this in a smart way that allows us new points of view and new perspectives. Thank you.
Okay, Heidi.
All right.
I'm the mother of an MSU student. I'm an MSU student myself, and I'm also an instructor at Gallatin College, and so I see the struggles that my students deal with, the things that get in their way when housing doesn't work out, transportation issues, all those kind of things. They're about a third of our population, so we can't discount them. We can't just say, well, it's the real citizens or anything like that. We need to look at them as a vibrant part of our community. Affordable housing, transportation, struggles of our non-traditional students that have families and jobs, those impact our community as a whole. If I'm elected, I'll be serving all the residents of Bozeman, whether they're students or not, whether they live on the east or the west like I do, and whether they're downtown or on the outskirts of town. The group of citizens who take an active role in our community is self-selecting. I believe that in order to reach a true consensus, we need to reach out to all the demographics that are impacted by our decisions, and that can take some work. I've seen that with the school board, especially in planning and designing our new high school, where we really have reached out to others. This includes engaging our MSU students when we're making community-wide decisions. I personally met with student leaders at the university, including the Science Policy Advocacy Network, students involved in other community organizations, and students I've met while knocking doors. Many of these students are knowledgeable about local, national, and global issues, and I've listened to their concerns. I want to hear their voices. I want them to vote for me. But most importantly, I want them to vote and make their voices heard.
First of all, it's important for MSU students to vote. Voting is how we find our civic voice. Voting collectively is how we exert our collective will. A Facebook or Instagram post might influence your friends. A vote can change the world. We need to get them to vote. An MSU student graduates with great hopes and great vim, but vim only gets you so far. You face a challenge in Bozeman. You face a situation where you have student debt. You face a situation where you might be spending more than 50% of your household income on rent. You face a very competitive job market. In fact, the gap between income and education is far greater in Bozeman than almost anywhere else. So there are real challenges that they will have to face. They want a commissioner, I think, that's always going to work on affordable housing every single day. That's going to work with the economic development team to grow real jobs here across a variety of sectors. To work with, like, Prospera, to have workshops on how to be an entrepreneur and start your own business, like Matt did. You need to buy his leather. It is incredible stuff.
Thank you.
You're welcome. But most of all, we need to leave the next generation of citizens and leaders with a vibrant, viable community. And we do that by paying attention to the long-term issues of sustainability, conservation, and renewable energy.
Okay.
Yes. I personally came here, Bozeman, almost 25 years for me to go to MSU so I can get a nice desk job. But instead of that, I've been working on a small restaurant kitchen. And like Mr. Messaferrier, he came here for MSU, but he fell in love here and then he stayed here. MSU and our city has many common interests. For example, MSU and our city support the Spring Line bus system. I was the liaison about that bus system. Lots of MSU students use this public transportation, which is very good. I grew up in a great public transportation system city. And MSU is a big part of this community. Our city economic development director, Mr. Brit Pantanen, and he's there working very hard to bring a high-paying job here. So more MSU graduate students, they be able to stay here if they want to. And our city has been improving, preserving open spaces and parks and trails. And these amenities are very good for the students. These are reasons why MSU students should be involved this our city government. So that's why they should vote for me. Thank you.
I don't know if Tracy Ellig is here, but he's a spokesperson for MSU. And he happens to be the little brother of one of my best friends. So I've talked to him a number of times about, you know, what is it that MSU students would want from a city candidate. And I've also talked to him a lot about housing. And they're same answer. It's housing. Affordable housing is a big one for MSU students. Jobs are a big one, too. Our company hires mostly MSU students. And most of our employees are also owners, and they've stayed with us a long time, and they've bought houses. Now, with that all said, MSU does have a niche on the affordable housing market that is really, I think, a lot of potential. Basically, they have land, and they have the history and ability to bond projects to build institutional quality homes or quality housing for students close into MSU that have a design life of 80 to 100 years. And through that process, even though that housing is expensive to start with, when you keep it that long, when it's paid for after 20 years of bonding, they've got a big stock. In fact, their stock of housing right now is higher than ever, even proportional to their student body. So I think they should expand that. They should not just do freshmen. They need to do more. And they need to do graduate students more. And they're working on that. And I look forward to working with MSU on that kind of an issue.
Sure. I think this is a really important question. It's important that we represent everyone. But especially when looking at young folks, we need to make sure, as Terry said, that they vote. This is a franchise that's so important to us as citizens. But for them to vote, they have to be excited about it. And I'll tell you a quick little story. About 2 weeks ago, I got a whole bunch of letters in the mail. No return addresses, just signed. We're really worried about affordable housing. It's hard to live here as a young person. Finally, on the 10th or 11th letter, there was an email. And I emailed that person. I said, let's talk. And we got a bunch of people together at Bridger Brewing, and we talked about housing. And I was surprised at the time to learn that no other city commissioner had set up a meeting to do that. It's important to show folks that you care. We talked about setting up an office for affordable housing and the problems that they had and how some of them are here tonight and how they were working several jobs and the stresses that they had. And I tried to show them that we care and we want their problems to be our problems so that we solve them. It used to be, if you were a parent, you were worried your kids could never come back because there weren't any jobs. Now we worry that they come back but it's too expensive to live here. We need to figure out ways to do that. The City Commission meets twice a year at a minimum with ASMSU. So we meet with the State Senate. Tomorrow night, we're having a party where we're going to meet with a bunch of young folks. They're going to drink beer and wine. I'm going to listen. And we're going to talk about issues that are important to them. We have to show them we care and get them excited in the process to show they can make a difference.
Hi.
I think an MSU student should vote for me because I really want you as an MSU student to stay here after you graduate if you want to. I know that was a challenge for me. Like I said, I had to work in a job outside of my degree there for a few years. I enjoyed doing it because of where I got to be. And with regard to MSU and my legacy, my mom went there. I have two brothers that attended there. One graduated. One got his doctorate in Colorado, and now he's back here teaching. He's a professor of engineering up at the school. I taught a couple classes as an adjunct instructor up there, and just the energy and enthusiasm you get when you're on the campus, and just the whole thirst for knowledge. I mean, it's contagious, and they are already, as an MSU student, you're already an extremely valuable member of this community, and I want you to stay if you want to stay. Now, I know it's costly to live here, but what I think is if we tackle that housing problem from a different angle and from the job side and the wage side and require public institutions like the city and the county and MSU, when they're hiring, when they're filling their jobs, have them at least give a preference, if not be required, to hire people that are from Bozeman. Okay, and incentivize. It's great to hear that Doug hires so many people from MSU, but incentivize those other businesses with the good jobs in town to hire MSU students, and so that they can make the kind of wage to be able to stay here. Thank you.
I think these are wonderfully thought out answers, and I thank all of you for them. You can direct your equipment, just one second, you kind of the ground rules. You can ask the question of a particular person if you want, or the mayor group, or the commissioner group, or, you know, whatever arrangement you want to make. And I would like then for all the other candidates to have a chance to answer if they wish to. And I would urge you not to answer every single one because it gets long. And we all need to be entertained at all times, right? So, who has a question? Yes, sir.
This is for all the candidates. What fraction of our new housing developments are outside the city? And assuming there's a substantial fraction and they're on wells and septic systems, and we now know that that wells are getting contaminated in, from septic systems, what are the challenges in bringing more of the new houses into the city so they can be on city services?
Did everybody hear the question? Okay. I would ask that you stand up when you ask your question. I should have asked you to from now on. Yeah. Who wants to answer
that? I'll be happy to go ahead.
Yeah. This ties partly into 1 minute?
Everybody gets a minute to
perfect.
Answer.
Perfect. Great. It ties into what we were talking about, the triangle planning area, because most of that's that. And so part of it is that the city, since 2009, has focused more on infill. It's better for the environment. It's better for the taxpayers to do that. But we're understanding more and more what's happening with the septic systems. I'm on the Board of Health and how that we see every week how the septic systems are failing and what it does to our water quality and overall public health. There's a thing in Four Corners where the septic is failing in a casino, and we need to really work on it. The idea that I would have is to set up a revolving loan fund so we can loan people money. So if they have to come into the city, the city would borrow and would set up a 30 or 40 year fund to get them on water and sewer as they annex in. So it makes it more affordable for them, because this is not cheap, it's very expensive. But the public health benefits are huge, and it would be done at an even cost to us. So we wouldn't pay any more, but we would have the benefit of these folks coming in and having a better public health system because of it.
Okay, go ahead.
The percentage of county and city, I don't know for sure, but I'm guessing it's about even. The city and the county growing about the same rate.
City's a little faster.
Right? A little faster, okay. So the issue that you have with annexing them into the town is that infrastructure is so expensive that when you try to put it against a big wide lot, it costs a lot, to the tune of $600 to $800 per linear foot of road, street, water, sewer, and all that kind of thing. So when you have 1 acre lots and bigger out in the county and half acre lots and 120 feet of frontage, you've got twice the cost to serve them with infrastructure as you would a 60 foot. Now, a lot of people don't know this, but the cost of a lot is more dependent on infrastructure than on land costs. There's more land, more infrastructure in a lot than there is land. So that's an issue, and the ring around the city is a real problem. There's a lot of places that are we're belted in. So,
thank you. This is really a big problem for the Four Corners right now. In the future, I predict it's a big problem. And what it is people when you have they failed their problems, and then they are asking about the, hey, I want to come to city. Guess what my position is? Please come. Welcome. I welcome you. Mm-hmm. For example, coming Monday, we have agenda, exactly, the noisy, and the Bridger Drive. They are in the county. They have the septic tank system, and they want to come into the city. So guess what I'm going to do? Please come. We welcome you. Thank you.
Anyone else?
I would just echo what Doug said with regard to the tremendous infrastructure costs. If you're not within, if you can't run a service line to an existing water or sewer main, you are looking at a tremendous cost if you're just one parcel. But if you can unite with your neighbors and perhaps come in as some sort of subdivision, we could, similar to what Chris said, kind of a revolving loan fund, maybe we could do something like a special improvement district, which would essentially be just a tax basically on all of the people coming in that they can pay off over 20 years to pay for that infrastructure.
Okay, another question, David.
Terry, I like your idea about owners of large businesses providing housing for their employees. Bozeman Health Development Corporation owns a lot of land on both sides of Highland Boulevard. The hospital employs a lot of people. Your former relationship with the hospital, you think that would put you in a good position?
Did everybody hear the question?
No.
Okay. Do you want me to summarize? The question is, Bozeman Health owns land on the east side of Highland. David Seinmuller is asking, because I'm and this doesn't go towards my time. I'm just,
right.
Yeah. So let me tell you about something else. Because I'm a former chairman, do I have a unique position to be able to influence the decision makers there to do workforce housing there? And the answer is, by golly, I'm trying. A couple of former chairmen are considered sort of chairman emeritus. We're invited to long-term strategic planning, and I am sounding that note. Because Bozeman Health is going to be competing for their own employees pretty soon if a competitor comes into town. They're on the far east side of town. A lot of their employees come from the far west side of town. We know that if you have employees who work closer to where they live, they're happier. That's a retention tool. It's a recruitment tool. And we know that it'll put less infrastructure pressure. It'll allow us to, not have failed intersections and those types of things, and we can do shift changes as well for those folks who come from other places. So all of these things will produce a great benefit, and it's not just a hospital. The school board has 12 and a half acres that I would love to get my hands on.
Yeah, go ahead, Ian.
When we hire our new city manager, Ms. Andrea Strout, I specifically asked her, if you get this job, could you help us? Right now we need more affordable housing here. But the thing is the price of land. The builders and developers, I have asked so many times, we have demand here. We do not have enough inventories. Why you are not building? Their answer is, Iho, the price of land is too high. So when I interview Andrea Strout, new city manager, hospital and MSU, big employers, they have a big chunk of land. Would you like to go there and help us, facilitate with us? Her answer is yes. I love to involve. I love to help you. Thank you.
Anybody else?
Yeah, go ahead. Back to the question about workforce housing. I know that, for example, the deputy mayor has already met a number of times with Odette Rosado to talk about exactly this, and the commission is fully behind it. I looked at the example of Chattanooga, Tennessee, if you know that. There's a small campus there, University of Tennessee. Their leadership, private sector, the government, the education got together. They worked on revitalizing their downtown because it's not as beautiful as ours. They worked together on workforce housing. They worked together on trail systems. And as a result, like Bozeman, they're now considered a leader in quality of life. We can do that here as well, and we are on the way to doing it. We need your support to send a message to Odette, send a message to the hospital, keep after us as well to make sure that we follow through on that. It's a real opportunity for us to provide some serious housing for people who are working hard, making an honest wage here, so that they can live in Bozeman.
Okay. Sorry, Heidi.
Bozeman Health was actually part of the discussions in the school board looking to put forward workforce housing. We think that is important, especially for MSU and the school district. Our budgets are limited. We can't pay our employees more. How do we recruit people here, especially those entry-level jobs that are getting very difficult to fill as our job market gets a little tighter here? And so one of the things we looked at is affordable housing, workforce housing, using land that we have. It allows us to put people in entry-level positions into housing, puts more money in their pocket. They were part of our discussion in helping us as a school district to come to that. I know it's something that we can potentially do with the hospital, with MSU, and also maybe look at some of the other employers in town who might be willing to help out with a project like that. Thank you.
Anybody else?
I'll just say something real quick with regard to the employers in town. I mean, let's make sure that when we hear that there's an affordable housing program or that a housing allowance is provided at certain institutions, like, say, for example, at the city, let's make sure that it's not upside down. In other words, that it's geared towards attracting people from out of the area to move here where they have a higher cost of living in someplace else. And we give these people making the big bucks on top of that, we give them a housing allowance, okay? Doesn't make sense to me. It seems to me that we need to focus on the people at the bottom making the lower wages that need help with making their housing payments. And we need to get past this notion that our problems can be solved by people from the outside or need to be solved by people from the outside. We have a tremendous amount of knowledge in this community. We've got a university. We get the students to stay here. We're going to have even more knowledge. So I'd really like us to focus on ourselves in that regard.
Okay. Everybody, that's right. Next question. Back there. Yes, ma'am.
Susan Milo, citizen. First of all, thank you all for your willingness to serve our fine city. My question is for all the candidates. Do you believe humans contribute to climate change? And if yes, how would you propose Bozeman tackle it?
Go for it. Yep. Fire it up.
Climate change is real. I'm a skier. When I came here, I'm from Korea, and where I'm then is way down south. When I moved here, my husband told me, "Yo, I'm not going to teach you how to ski. Take lessons," because he tried to teach me how to drive in San Diego, California. We almost say goodbye each other. So here, you take lessons, Iho. I've been taking lessons over decades. Guess what? Snow is getting less. What I believe is the reason people keep moving and staying here is winter is getting milder. So what we have to do is people moving here is and staying here is beautiful mountains and beautiful trails and rivers and parks and etc. Guess what? We have obligation to preserve this kind of wonderful amenity for ourselves and our family. And guess what? Infill. Thank you.
I'm a scientist, and it's real, and it's caused by men. There's no question in my mind about that. What I'd like to do to combat global warming is I'd like to put a fairly large tax on gasoline that was countywide and funded the county and the city for part of the money that tourists and people from outside use. And I'd like to give some tax relief to our property taxpayers. That's what I'd like to do.
We are about to lose, when Carson retires, the loudest and strongest voice for climate, responsible climate usage. It is absolutely a man-made issue as well. One of the reasons that I decided to run for the commission is to continue Carson's legacy. He's the one who decided bravely and correctly to sign on to the Paris Accords on behalf of the city. We have a responsibility to our city, our future generations, to do things like invest in renewable energy. We need to get the Bozeman Solar Project, we need to get the data out of that, and we need to get that moving along. We absolutely have to be concerned about our water conservation practices. We have to be concerned about how we build. We need to provide builders with positive incentives to align to the south so we can put solar roofs on there, to do good insulation. We have an absolute responsibility to do this as a commission because we're the leaders and it's an important goal.
Humans do contribute to climate change. I'm a meteorologist. I've studied this for years. It's real. I tell my students, I tell them they can disagree with me if they want, but this is how our class is being taught. I am very proud that the city signed on to the Paris Climate Accord, and I think that's a baseline. We have to start there as a baseline and then continue to look at ways that we can work to improve the impact of our city and it's what the city does as an employer, as a business, as a government, and also how we can influence our citizens positively. I also want to work with the state legislature to get PACE, the alternative energy credit. I'm saying that wrong, but the idea is that if you want to put green energy in your house, you can pay for it in your taxes over 20 years. I think that that would be a great idea, allow a lot of people a lot more flexibility who want to do this but can't come up with that upfront cost. It's getting cheaper. We can do more with less money. Let's make it happen.
I, too, believe that we are the sole responsibility, or not sole, but the main responsibility for global warming, and I think it's true. I think there's a lot of things we can do. Even in the course of my lifetime, it was in elementary school, how is this going to affect my grandchildren? And now it's, how is it going to affect me now? And it's come up on us quicker than I think any of us may have anticipated or realized. I think there's a lot of things we can do. I think we should start by leading the way. We are growing on what is basically a blank slate. You know, we have all this open land. There's no reason we're not doing it to the utmost of our abilities, using the most advanced technologies, using the most up-to-date materials, cutting down on our construction waste. From what I understand, 30% of our landfill is construction waste. If we can cut down on the stuff that goes straight from the lumberyard straight to the landfill without ever serving its purpose, it would be a great start. Like Heidi mentioned, the PACE program is a very, very good program. It allows you to slowly pay off green energy systems throughout the course of your home ownership through tax liens. Right now, it's the state legislation that is blocking a lot of this stuff. So please call your state legislators. Tell them to lift the arbitrary limits they have on all these systems, and please embrace the sun and the wind that we have in Montana. Looking, hit me next time.
Just throw it at him.
Of course, it's human cause. Everyone in this room probably agrees that. The problem isn't Bozeman, unfortunately. The problem is the legislature of Washington, D.C. And so it's up to us to lead. One of the proudest moments of this campaign for me was to receive the endorsement of the Montana Conservation voters. Because they looked at my record and what we did as a city in terms of reducing how much we used as a city, and then having higher standards for other development, commercial or residential. Second, production. The city has made it much easier to put panels on your own house, but we're also producing ourselves. And third, frankly, we're adapting. We're going to have flood events and other things that we didn't before, and we owe it to our citizens that they be safe when we adapt. That three-pronged strategy is important. We also have a best-in-the-West water conservation strategy. It all ties together of how we adapt and what we think. We can be leaders for Montana. It's falling to Bozeman to show Montana that you can conserve and still grow and still do well and have a high quality of life. If we don't lead, who will? Let us lead together.
Brian? What more is there to say? Knock yourself out.
First of all, yeah, I believe in climate change. I don't know that I can look you in the eye and tell you. I feel like you want me to look you in the eye and tell you that I think it's human caused. Humans could be a contributor. I don't know. I've listened to the arguments on both sides. I don't know. I mean, we could have another ice age tomorrow or soon, just the same way the economy could fall out again. I don't know for sure. The climate does seem to be changing. Regardless of what the reason is, we can. I agree with all of the measures. I agree with living a lifestyle that a green lifestyle. My footprint, as far as what I drive around town, I rode a motorcycle here tonight. I don't know if you've seen that crazy guy driving a four-wheeler around town during the winter, but that's me. I rode my bicycle for decades in this town. I believe in taking all the steps and in living a lifestyle as if it was caused by humans, but I don't know that I can be honest with you and tell you that I fully believe that.
Well, there was no energy in that question. Okay, back in the far corner, Melissa.
I've heard a lot of really important discussion about long-term and sustainable plans regarding housing and the environment and sustainability. And an integral part of a sustainable, healthy community is the economic status of women. And I am wondering, considering Bozeman's current resolution to commit to closing the gender pay gap in our community and to act as a model for the state, what are your ideas to strengthen our current commitments to close the gender pay gap and to bolster the economic status of women in our community?
everybody hear the question?
Okay. I'll start with that with a simple answer. Allied Engineering employs the engineers mostly, and we've got two lady engineers. They get paid the same as the men. Both of them are smarter than most of the men.
So it's a really important question. How we get the most out of our community means that we treat everyone fairly with dignity and respect, and that means equality for a wide variety of reasons, but especially this. The one thing that immediately occurs to me is what we've done. We look internally to make sure that we pay people the same as the city. We try and set an example. I would point you to who we just hired as a city manager. Andrea is going to be awesome. And we hired her because she's the best person for the job, but it certainly didn't hurt that she was a female and it exceeded her. And we really look forward to her being here. One of the deputy mayors was a finance city managers was a finance director before, and she has earned her way up as well. We promote because of experience and their ability to do things, and we will continue to do so. And we're trying to send a message to all the community that that's important, and that's how we get the most out of our community, and we respect each other, and we prosper together because of that respect. It's essential that we do that, that we have compassion for each other.
April 19th. That was Gender Equality Pay Day last year, which meant that if you were a woman, you had to work the entire previous year and then till April 19th of the current year to make the same amount that a man makes. If that doesn't open your eyes about what's happening nationally, nothing will. We are taking actions as part of a city, and that includes hiring and trying to recruit people who, for instance, we want women on our police force. We want men in our librarian situations. I think it's a time when we start saying to the folks that we contract, we want you to do that too. We want you to live up to what we're trying to do, and we can provide you the toolkit to allow you to do it. We spend a lot of money. That gives us influence. And if you have influence, you have to start living and contracting in a manner that reflects your values. And I think that should happen.
Yes, go ahead, Ian.
We have in our city deputy fire chief as lady, and we just hired our top city position. Our new city manager is lady, and our assistant city manager is lady, and also the finance director is lady. And my small restaurant, majority of my employees are lady. And the men and the ladies, we have the same paychecks. But still, I think when you look at the majority top positions, still, yes, we have more men. But I think we are going the right direction, and we still have to have a lot of work to do. Thank you.
The hashtag MeToo really struck me because as a woman who's been working in science, as a veteran, I got put down a lot of times. And we need to be working to make sure that we don't stand for it. I think the city is leading the way. I think we also need to do that with our vendors and contractors and make sure that they are paying women the same they are paying men and serve as a role model and get that message out into our community that this is how we operate in Bozeman. I'm really proud of our new STEM initiative in the school district, which is also using innovation and creativity as part of the way they teach STEM, because some of the girls are feeling a little put down because their creativity isn't part of what they're doing. And so we're trying to make sure that we engage these girls and make sure that they can be interested in STEM and have the knowledge to get those high paychecks like other people do. Thank you.
It's 2017, and it's kind of crazy that we still have such a discrepancy with the pay between men and women. It seems like an issue that we just can't rely on businesses to do willingly, because they obviously have not done that on their own power. So I don't know exactly how I would implement it, but I would like to talk with the Chamber of Commerce. I'd like to talk to the Downtown Business Association. I'd like to talk with small businesses in town to pledge that they, as a small business owner in town, will pay their female employees equal as their male employees. And so at least we can start to hold local businesses in our community accountable for who they hire, what they pay them, and how economically that pays us all back as a community for, you know, more comfortable situations for all of us. So I think that's where I would start, is just communication with the business owners in town and hold them accountable.
The brightest, most hardworking, energetic, lovable person that I know is my better half, who happens to be a small business owner. The highest paid employees at her organization are female, and the reason they're the highest paid is because they deserve it. They're the hardest workers. They're the most committed to her organization. And I really think that's what we want at the end of the day. Is we don't want anyone to be subsidized. We want people to get paid. We want people to earn it. So the program, my brother with professor of engineering, I mean, he has been instrumental in getting that at MSU with the math and the engineering emphasis on the female students. It's just simply not acceptable, and it should be criminal, quite frankly, if those situations are discovered.
Yes, in the back.
So I live in West Bozeman, and I have to go all the way downtown for work. And I would love to ride Streamline or ride my bike more, but it's certainly not safe all the time to ride your bike Durston or Maine, Babcock, any of those streets. And it takes me almost an hour to ride Streamline all the way downtown, and I only live 3 miles away. What's your proposal for encouraging safe, accessible, and sustainable transportation?
So, really important. You can't have affordable housing without mass transit if they're integrated and essential together. Just in September, I made the motion and the commission agreed, and we increased funding to Streamline to add another one because it's that important that we do that. That's a cooperative program with MSU and the city. We're really, really trying to get the county to join us. We're all county residents. Call your county commissioners and ask them to join us in that. My first vote as a city commissioner was for complete streets. That meant that every new street has to be available for walking, biking, or mass transit. The real problem we're having is with the old streets before that policy. How do you put bike lanes on Peach Street or on Durston? We have a really creative idea to take the parking off the north side of Babcock around Main Street and put in two-lane bike lanes there next spring. And if it works, we'll consider doing it on Mendenhall as well. Bring some circulation into downtown. We still need to solve a lot of the other problems. We've put in more bike lanes since I've been a commissioner than the previous city for their entire history. It's really important that we do this.
We have you pay 3 MILL, MILL for Affordable Housing Fund. So the value of MILL, MILL, it is state decide. This year, FY18 is a little bit higher. Right now, the value of 1 MILL is $101,000. So we have a little over $300,000. And the balancing budget is a city is very important. So I suggested, if we have some leftover money, please help HRDC Streamline. I was 2 years Streamline liaison, so we kept the promise. We helped them. And then I wonder why they have not more frequent bus line system. The problem is the fund money. And if they need more drivers, more buses, but we are working on, and also like we need more county help. I ask all three county commissioners, please help us streamline buses. They go your place. They said, EO. So I hope someday they have answers.
We have a cadre of pretty dedicated bikers that come to Allied Engineering. Our office is not a great bike route out to it. It's out in the Genesis building or business park. But we've had the likes of Taylor Lonsdale, who is kind of a biking guru here in town. He's one of our former colleagues, and I still consult him on this issue. Our staff, and we're an employee-owned company, we've donated a lot of hours to designing bridges and trails and so forth for GVLT. I'd like to see more of those trails paved, if possible, and plowed in the wintertime. I think that would actually go a long way if you on the west side had a good east-west trail that was paved and plowed, and you could ride it year-round. And it is possible. And it costs a lot less than roads. So,
So kind of to build up what Doug was saying, I think it's important that as we go to the west side, we take into consideration the trails that we put in before the subdivisions go in. It's much easier to put these things in before you have to cut through somebody's backyard and say this is the easiest way to get to the east side without going on a road. And right now we have, we're slowly losing it, but we still have the ability to do that. You know, we can connect all those subdivisions to Meadowlark Elementary School and the future high school. We can connect it to the regional park. We can connect it to those stores on 19th Street. We just have to do it sooner rather than later to make it easier. I think we should pressure MSU into doing more as far as express bus routes are concerned to and from town and student dense areas, specifically on the west side. And like Doug said as well, we need to plow routes in the wintertime, so we're not forced to ride in the actual car lane itself. And then two more things. I think we should look into little commercial spots out west so we don't all have to commute into town for work. This way we can get rid of the commute in general. And lastly, we should look into the Idaho bike law and adopt that, which allows bicycles more frequency and better ease to go in and out through traffic.
I'm really proud of our partnership with the city and other organizations in the Safe Routes to Schools, where we're making sure that there are trails and bike paths and things like that around our schools. When I look at the maps, when you look at the trails, you look at the bike lanes, the eastern side of town's pretty organized, but as you get out west where I live and where many of my young friends live, it's really disjointed. A friend of mine said she wants to take the bus, but once she loads her baby up to drive 6 blocks, she's not going to park her car and take the bus. That's the reality of it. So we need to look at how we do that. One of the things is we have to look for funding, and that's where a local option sales tax like Big Sky has, or a possibility of a gas tax. Those are ways that we can improve our roads, ways that we can provide more bus routes and things like that that make it possible for people to get around town. If I'm elected, I want to get an electric bicycle, because with my knee replacement, biking all the way to downtown and back from the west side of town doesn't always work well, but with an electrical bicycle, I should be able to do that.
Like I said earlier, I bicycled winter, summer, spring, fall for decades in this town. And quite frankly, one of the reasons that I stopped doing it, in addition to getting older, is that it was getting a little scary. I mean, wiping out when you're younger is a little bit easier than wiping out when you get older. And then the close calls were starting to bother me a little bit more, too. So we definitely have a problem with the bike system out there. And I think we still kind of do. When I look at what is on Durston and 19th, for example, I don't know that I'm going to be real comfortable in that lane out there. I might be comfortable, but I don't know if the drivers around me are going to know. So there's an education that needs to go along. Like, how do you operate with a bike lane that's right there? And I know from riding my four-wheeler around town that doesn't have turn signals on it. Whenever I give my turn signals, I'm always waved back, which is great. Very nice, warm, welcoming community. I love that. But I'm thinking to myself, they know that I'm signaling, so maybe an education component so that we feel safer.
Okay, couple more questions. Back here, and then the woman in the yellow dress. Yes.
So everybody's spoken about affordable housing and how it's a crutch of our community. One thing that ties into affordable housing is the Airbnb crisis that we have right now in our town. There are more and more unregulated rentals on the market today than there have been ever. It's taking away housing from middle-class working people like myself, students, jacking rents up. So, question, what do you propose to regulate the Airbnb crisis? I call it a crisis.
So we this summer, as most people should know, this summer the City Commission passed a number of regs that have to do with short-term rentals. And because of that reason, and also because of the character of neighborhoods that were changing, that houses were dark for part of the time. And basically we're buying the software and we're paying for the staff and we're going to regulate folks and we're going to track down everyone who's not registered. And we're also saying now that in R1 and R2 and R3, we can't have these Airbnbs to the extent that we did anymore. So we've grandfathered some in, but we've basically capped what's going forward so that it won't happen anymore. And that's the goal, is to have a system that we understand. For some, where if you live in your house and you rent out a house to make ends meet because prices are rising and you need to pay taxes and pay the cost of living, you can still do that. But we want the fire department to come and make sure that it's safe for the folks, make sure it's safe for you. But we're really cutting down, especially on the unoccupied Airbnbs, where rich people are buying it as an investment opportunity That's what we're trying to slow down and regulate. And I think we can do it in a safe way, but also an efficient way. We looked at a bunch of other cities that did it to learn from them that have had this problem before we did. And hopefully it's up and running now as we get it going, and we'll see some results pretty soon.
Go.
So to kind of add on to what Commissioner Mell was saying, I agree that we should let people who own their homes with an extra room in it let short-term rentals occur in their house, especially after fire inspection, everything like that, just to help them pay the bills. And it doesn't take away from current rental opportunities in town. As far as regulating it into the future and just allowing people who have grandfathered into the system to stay versus people who want to get involved with the system, I was talking with some folks about maybe a lottery system like the big game animals where you put in your hat and some of you get it, some of you don't, but there's a fee to, you know, there's a fee to apply. So we get money from that, and then some people have it and some people don't. It's a limited amount of time. So even though if you do get the short-term rental, it's not guaranteed forever. It's in for a set amount of time. So let's say 2 years, and you know once your two-year time period is up, you can hold on to the house, but you can only live in it, or you can only rent it long-term. And some sort of system like that where it rotates so everybody has the opportunity for it. You're just not grandfathered into the system, but a system that regulates it as well so it's just not a runaway system on top of it.
And you have to put your antelope in it.
One hell of a moderator.
Sure. We, our city commissioners and our staffs have worked so hard for this one. So we had a back and forth and back and forth. We had a lot of long hours commissioner meetings for the Airbnb. So right now, I know this is not a perfect systems, but we have. So I hope it works for everybody. Thank you.
Anybody else want to speak to that? Yes.
I was disappointed at the outcome of the short-term rental policy because I think it's still allowed too many units in too many areas of town to be completely rented out as a vacation rental. And I totally agree with if you're living there and you need, in order to make your monthly payments, in order you rent out a room and whatnot. But and I do believe in property rights and the free market, but if we as a community are going to say that affordable housing is a priority, then we're going to have to take action when the opportunity presents itself, as it did with the short-term rentals. I was disappointed when the Black Olive passed last night. The first thing I did is took a look at the zoning on it and to see. I thought, you know, in 2 years it's all going to be vacation rentals, was my fear. And sure enough, it was allowed. That is a possibility, unless I'm missing something. And that's not what we want in this community. Let's get everybody into one house, and then we'll worry about what we can all do with our second houses.
Yes.
When the state government is planning on cutting the budget for programs that assist our disabled community members, I'm wondering what your plan is to locally help are physically and mentally disabled citizens.
Did you hear
them? I did. So the question was, the state's facing extreme budget cuts, and the focus of the question was on disabled, both mentally and physically disabled. Thank you. More and more, whether it's the federal level or the state level, there's a clear signal that we as a community are on our own. We're being asked to do more than we have before. And that means working with HRDC. I volunteer with Family Promise for families that are homeless to help them get back on their feet. And we have to do the same thing for disability. Mental health is a crisis in this community right now. And it's going to grow. And it's really unfortunate. And a lot of those people need a lot of help. And so we're going to have to find ways with the county, but also with the hospital and many others to address just that one small part of the larger problem in the U.S. Because frankly, we can't act, if we don't do it, no one will do it. And so we have to be creative. HRDC, for example, knows much more about affordable housing than I will, and so my goal is to give them the resources so they can do their job well. I think we can do that with healthcare, with mental health care and other things. But frankly, we can't, as compassionate people, sit by and watch this happen. We owe it to our community members that we step up as a society and say, we will take care of the least among us. That is how I think we have to measure ourselves. What did we do for those people?
We are our brother's keeper. We are our sister's keeper. We need to be good neighbors. We need to be inclusive. And we need to worry about the least among us. Those are the folks who don't have the voice. That's who I want to represent. and make sure that they have a voice on the commission. I'm on the ED roundtable as part of my work with Run Dog Run, and the executive director of REACH is in there. And they work with disabled folks all the time. They do wonderful work, and then they get this sucker punch from the state government and from the feds. As Chris said, we're going to have to deal with these issues ourselves. There's a mental health symposium, behavioral health symposium, that is a grassroots effort. We are going to have to take responsibility for things because there's not going to be these programs. And it's a shame because our tax dollars go to the city, to the county, to the state, and federally, and now we are going to be responsible for this. And you have to be.
Mental health issues. And population growth, definitely. Yes, I have a personal experience. And then last year, October, Reverend Connie came out to city. We are working with MSU and building tiny houses, the small village first. So they asking about the land, the city. If I have a restaurant, I'm going to have a fundraiser for the tiny houses. February, I did. So what it is right now, according to HRDC, one homeless person cost our taxpayers' money $20,000 a year. Ambulance, ER, and all the police officers. So we really addressed this one is seriously. Mental health issue, and yes, thank you.
Thank you.
This one's close to my heart because when I do volunteer in the schools and have a dog to work with, I am volunteering in classrooms with students who are physically, mentally, or emotionally disabled. Many of these students can be at least partially, if not fully, self-supporting if there's systems in place to help them succeed. And I think we benefit by that because if they're at least supporting themselves in part or even fully, then we don't have to support them. But without systems of support, they can't do that. And we need to find ways to make that happen. Again, local option sales tax is a possible way of finding funding for that. But they're an important part of our community. We see them out in our community all the time. And we need to make sure that we are supporting them and helping them be successful because that helps all of us succeed.
Anybody else? Okay, let's do two more questions, and then there'll be a little time for you to come up and greet each candidate. Yes, in the back.
I grew up in Seattle, and I'm relatively new here. And to be honest, I've had a little bit of a mixed welcome. So my question is for you as city commissioners, is the door open in Bozeman, and what's your plan to make sure that if there is a welcome mat, that it's known for people who are new here?
Let me welcome. We want a community that's welcoming, period. Whether you're young and you're looking at your first job, whether you dropped out of high school and you're trying to make ends meet, or whether you lived here for four generations and you're retiring here. We try to send as clear a signal as we possibly can through a non-discrimination ordinance, through back, we were talking about gender equity and everything else, that it's really important that we be a welcoming community. We as a society are as only as good as we treat each other, like we were talking about with the previous question. And that, I think that extends, frankly, to everyone. It doesn't just extend to one part or one others. We need to be a welcoming community. We're stronger because of it. That diversity makes us stronger. One of the things that Bozeman, frankly, I sometimes worry about is we don't have much diversity. And so how do we show that we can be more welcoming and bring those folks in and make them appreciated? And so they know through our words, but most importantly through our actions, that we care about them, that we want them to do well, and that we want them to be join the PTA, to volunteer at the food bank, and do all the other things that tie us together, those bonds of community that are so important.
To me, you look like just fitting here. Look at me. 4 years ago, I am very, very grateful. It's an amazing candidate, but they elected me. I am very, it's such an honor. When we got here for me to go to MSU, my husband tried to find a job, but it was very hard for him to get a job that time because it was depression. But at that time, Judge Olson found out my husband has a Korean wife. So he said, why don't I hire him as a public dependent? The reason he got a job is he adopted a 30 years ago Korean beggar. His son couldn't finish school here. So right now, what I did is we are going the right directions. And you're right. We don't have that many people like me. But what I have been experiencing is a very welcoming, very kind community. So we are going the right direction. Welcome. Okay.
When Laura and I moved here about 20 years ago, we moved from Atlanta. Their slogan was "The City Too Busy to Hate," which indicated that if they could find the time, they do that. They just hadn't been able to get around to it because they're so busy. So we started, volunteering as a way to make friends and socialize. And that's a horrible, horrible reason to start volunteering. But when we look back on it, most of the friends that we have now are a result of those experiences. One of the things I would encourage you is to take a look at some of the groups, the Facebook groups, the hiking groups, the BWAC. So there's great community groups that are extremely welcoming, but they don't always, they're not able to find you. I would encourage you to, if the community steps forward, they will step forward, and it takes a half a step on your behalf to do that. There's wonderful ways to connect in a variety of different ways about the things that you care about. They're going to find a group of passionate people here, whatever that is.
I also started volunteering right away when we moved here 20 years ago. It was a way to meet people. It was a way to get engaged and become part of the community right away. All voices need to be heard. All people need to be welcomed here. And that's whether they're old or new, whether they're from the East or the West, whether they're gay or straight, whether disabled or not. We need to be a welcoming community. I think in large part we are, but there's pockets where we're not, and we need to continue to work on that. That's why I volunteer with the Montana Racial Equity Project and have done some volunteer work with the Montana Pride Foundation, because we need to make sure that this city is welcoming to everybody, because it benefits all of us.
So 12 years ago when I first moved here, I had a New Jersey license plate on my car. And I was flipped the bird more than once. Still to this day, people ask me, why doesn't it say transplant from New Jersey on your flyer when you go out and volunteer for commission? And, it's obvious you can find the negative, but the positive here in town is a lot of us aren't from here. And the majority of us move here because it's such a special place. We don't come here for money. We don't come here for a job. We come here because of what we have already. And even though there are folks that are a little hesitant to see this influx of people come, we live in America. We're free to move. And you have to be welcoming, whether you like it or not, because it's the easiest way to move forward, in my mind. And I have friends from Texas, California, New Jersey, Montana, everywhere. And we all have something in common because of our love for this area. And like has been mentioned, all the volunteer efforts I've done, all the organizations that I've gone to, even though they might not reach out to you immediately, everybody does seem to be quite welcoming. And hopefully you can find that here in town as well.
On behalf of the community, I'd like to express apologies to not only you, but to Matt. I mean, that is really maybe I'm naive and living in a box, but I mean, I'm really surprised to hear it. And that is terrible, because we are a welcoming and diverse community, and you give us strength. So I thank you for coming, and please stay. Please keep engaging with the community. I think over time you're going to find that the overwhelming majority are not going to be like the few that turned you off. So.
One more question.
Nope. Can I just say one thing for
you? Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm from Bozeman. And when I moved here, there was 8,000 people in the city and 4 in the college. And I think a lot of us look back that we're from here from the start. And, we miss the old days when it was a smaller town. Myself, I don't think my wife would have moved here to the town I lived in as a kid. And I found that the people that move here, include a lot of my relatives and my best friends, they're here because they love it. There's quite a few. They're all here because they love it. They came here because they love it. There's quite a few of my types, you know, old natives that are here, that are just here because they're here, you know. So anyway, I hope you get welcomed more and welcome from me. So
one more burning question. Yes, in the back.
This question is for all candidates. I know we talked a lot about affordability tonight, but I do wonder, are you satisfied with 1 in 10 when it comes to affordable housing? And if not, what can you talk about in terms of what you want to do to change that?
Sure.
The question was about affordable housing. I'm going to look to make sure I capture it. And it was specifically about what's called inclusionary zoning, which is we have a variety of things. It's the regulatory part where we say for new construction, 1 in 10 or 10% have to be for affordable housing. And are we satisfied with that as a goal? No. But the question is that we were talking about before, and the housing question was asked us, we have to do more on all three of the legs of the stool. The regulatory leg, in terms of the size of the lots, what can be built, upzoning in some places where it's appropriate, so the volume is part of the answer. Targeted housing for homeless or rentals that are geared towards working families that are having trouble making rent or buying that first home is part of the answer. And frankly, as we build more homes, that is part of the answer too from a regulatory standpoint. We looked at about 300 different communities that have inclusionary zoning. Some had 5%, some had 20. We found some that started at 20 failed out. And so we thought we should start at 10 to make sure it works while we get it up to speed, and then reevaluate it every single year to see how it's going. So it's a step in a process. We just started this summer. We got to make sure it works, because if we fail, it's a huge setback for people who are looking for housing as we go forward. But we're going to be looking at this every single year as we do more and more about it.
I'm not at all satisfied with 1 in 10, and I'm especially not satisfied with the inclusionary zoning law. Inclusionary zoning requires a builder or a developer to build one house out of 10 less expensive, yet there's no part of the regulatory framework that makes that house any less expensive. So the other 9 houses are all pitching in a few thousand dollars each to make one affordable one. And then we have a program to administer that affordable housing program, and that uses up a little bit more money in the city. I just don't think it's efficient, and I don't think it targets the most needy people in our town. It targets people that barely can't afford a house, which they're still fairly well off. So I just don't agree with it.
The Bend project, I think, is the most equitable way for a community to address the affordable housing issue, because it asks all builders, whether or not you're doing a gas station or a hotel or you're building a single family, to chip in a small amount. And that goes into a pool of funds so that the people who know how to do affordable housing best, who can leverage those funds federally and on a state level, are the ones who are producing the affordable housing. In Bend, their version of Swimbia likes this program because they've got a nonprofit arm that keeps on getting funding for these. So even during an economic downturn, the hammers are still swinging in Bend. It's a community solution that I think we should bring here to Bozeman. I think it's the most equitable way of addressing the issue and allowing the folks who do it best to do it. And when I called them, the person who manages this program and has for the last 12 years, he said, "We were wondering what the first Montana city to call about this program was going to be, and we're glad it was Bozeman."
I'm just going to be quick about it. No, I'm not satisfied. We need to have a lot of strategies. And I think everybody said everything else there is to be said. So.
Yeah, I agree with everybody else. I don't think it's enough. And the inclusionary zoning, it seems a little backwards to me, because we're kind of forcing our hand, or forcing the developer to do something they don't really want to do. So ideally, I'd like to work with them and figure out a way that incentivizes them to build that and want to build those instead of being forced and just meeting the minimum requirements that we impose. I don't know, we'd have to look at impacting, or the impact fees have to look at, giving reimbursements or incentives to smart systems, new materials, different ways of putting neighborhoods together to cut down on the infrastructure that we talked about earlier. And so, no, I don't think it's enough as of now.
As the chair of the Community Affordable Housing Advisory Board, I was pleasantly surprised when the board actually voted to recommend against implementing the inclusionary zoning, because similar to Doug, I'm not in favor of inclusionary zoning. I think we jumped the gun on going there. How the ordinance was implemented was that there was going to be a voluntary part of it that was implemented first, and there were some targets set, okay, and then some deadlines. And by the time the deadlines rolled around, it was apparent that the targets hadn't been met. But if you look at the ordinance, and you probably said it and heard it up here, it was only looking for single-family homes to be built. Anything like a condo or a townhome or a rental, none of that counted. But yet all of that was being done voluntarily by the building community. Now, there was some major miscommunication as far as they didn't know they were supposed to be communicating and getting this stuff certified. And there was no back and forth. So there was, we need, in my opinion, we need to give the voluntary program another shot.
Thank you. I am very glad. Finally, I can give you the answer. People ask me, Iho, you, one of your passions is affordable housing. Why did you vote to no at city affordable housing ordinance? You don't know how many hours and my effort, my sweat, and studying our city current affordable housing ordinances. The thing is, I concluded is this is not going to help. Like I said, I'm not very satisfied because it's mandatory. What I'm afraid is I want builders and developers building more housing here. We already know supply and demand. Right now, our demand is here, supply is here. Please build more houses. Guess what? My concern is mandatory. What I think is pushing out the building Bozeman, pushing the Manhattan, Belgrade, and Livingston. So, no, I am not satisfied our current affordable mandatory law. Thank you.
I want to thank you all for coming. The League of Women Voters, which is what I represent, is very intrigued with the notion of education. And I think you all got a great education tonight on these candidates. I think they're lovely candidates. I think we're going to be in good hands, whoever gets elected. Thank you so much for coming. I appreciate it. Thank you all for coming and learning about the candidates for this office.